thumbed the strap onto my shoulder, and made my way around the air-conditioning units, which looked down at the one-story inset at the back of the hotel. I was about two doors down from what had been my room, and I could hear a lot of thumping, singing, and crashing as Buck Guzman kept him busy. It was a quick straddle over the side and onto the adjacent building, where it was so hot that the patched portions of the roof stuck to the soles of my boots. The next roof was a little bit steeper, so I tossed the duffel down first and then rolled over the side to land on my feet. I got across to the next one, walked to the edge, and squinted at a colorful mural just in front of a 20-foot drop. I looked around. There was an escape ladder toward the alley, so I tripped the latch and it ratcheted to the parking lot below. Climbing down, I threaded through the cars and headed for the opening in the fence at the north end, expecting a black SUV or a Lincoln Town Car to slide in front of me at any moment. Safely making it to the sidewalk, I turned right as instructed, skimmed behind a tree, and pulled open the door of Chiquita's bar to step into the cool darkness. My eyes adjusted from the glare outside, and I could see the place was mostly empty except for a large group of noisy young people in a corner booth and an elderly bartender who was polishing glasses. I stepped toward the bar and asked, "Are you Juan Carlos?" He gave me a quizzical look. "Yes?" "Buck sent me." A moment passed. "Sent you for what?" "Well, he said to put me in his special booth, and that he'd be along." Juan Carlos looked toward the corner where the young men, recovering from my entrance, were talking loudly again and laughing. "I'm sure any place'll do." He gestured toward the booth on the other side of the narrow building. "You want something to drink?" I nodded. Water? He stared at me. "A beer, please." Nodding a hello toward the gang, I made my way to the other corner booth in the back, threw my duffel on the seat, and slid in after it. I tried to ignore the group who were looking at me and then whispering and laughing as the bartender approached with a paper napkin and a Lone Star.
$1.75.
"I might be here for a while. Do you want to run a tab?"
$1.75.
Realizing that things get expensive when you're on the lam, I pulled my wallet and plucked out a few bills.
"Keep the change."
I sat there and thought about my situation and how I'd possibly made it worse. Buck had been the one who had set up my meeting with the seer, but I wasn't sure if he'd been aware of how quickly things could accelerate when dealing with federal government agencies. I glanced up at the clock behind the bar and could see it was already 3 p.m. So I had a little less than 6 hours to get to Mexico and get started saving Katie. I tried to breathe regularly, but there was a pain in my chest that wouldn't let up, a pain that had nothing to do with my physical condition. A million versions of my daughter haunted me, memories that sometimes appeared in sepia tone and others that were so clear that I felt as if I could almost reach out and touch her. They were not epic moments in our lives together, but rather small looks, brief exploits or quiet words, like the time she'd confronted me when I was driving her to school at the wizened age of 6. I like it better when Mommy drives me to school. I pulled up to Clear Creek Elementary.
"And why is that?"
She climbed out of my unit, pulling her backpack onto her shoulder. "It doesn't look like I just got out of jail." I looked up through my memories. The kid on the end, with all the tattoos, was staring at me.
"Hey, Poppy, how you doing?"
It was dark, but I could see the number 155 under his do-rag and the words Knight Templar at his throat.
"I'm good, you?"
He glanced at his friends and shook his head.
"I'm confused. Did you think this was a cowboy bar?"
I adjusted my hat. "I'm just waiting on a friend." He spoke again as the others snickered.
"I mean, I don't see John Travolta or no plastic bull in here."
I turned the beer on the napkin. "I'm having a kind of rough day."
"Me too. I was sitting here having a few drinks with my friends, and suddenly this cowboy comes in like he owns the place."
I thought I saw a few flashes of metal under their table, and my hand drifted to the bag at my side.
"I think maybe you should go sit at the bar, like a good little cowboy."
I was losing my patience, but figured a gunfight was likely to end with me once again in the hands of the El Paso Police Department, and subsequently the FBI.
"Look, guys."
"Guys?"
He glanced at the others.
"We look like guys to you?"
I was silent.
"Oh, I get it. You're looking for guys. Well, you got the wrong bar for that, my friend." You're looking for the toolbox around the corner. That's more your kind of place.
I sighed and slowly began unzipping the bag and feeling for my Colt. I just want to drink my beer.
He slid from the green Naga hide, and I watched as his hand snaked to the waistband of his elaborately stitched jeans. No, I think maybe you should go suck on a long neck somewhere else. Get it, Poppy?
It was at that point that a great deal of sound and fury came from the front of the establishment, and Buck Guzman slung open the door. He strolled by the bartender, snagging the beer he held out for him before continuing toward us, still singing,
"He's in the jailhouse now, he's in the jailhouse now. Well, I told him once or twice to stop playing cards and shooting them dice. He's in the jailhouse now."
Stopping between the booths, he looked at the young men, especially the tattooed one standing in front of him, and then at me as he pointed with the bottle.
"I thought I told you that booth."
It was occupied. Pivoting, Buck drew a thumb across his belt line, pulling back his canvas jacket and exposing his basket-weave gun belt along with the massive stainless S&W model 19-5. He cocked his head at them.
"What the hell are you wetback pendejos doing in my booth?"
As quick as a flock of roadrunners, the corner emptied, and they climbed over each other as they hurried for the door without looking back. Guzman turned and grinned, his teeth shining, touched with the gold inlays that were a specialty of the dentists from down Mexico Way, the gold U.S. Customs and Border Protection badge in plain view. He chugged his beer, his Adam's apple bobbing as the bottle quickly emptied. Gesturing toward the bartender, he shouted,
"Juan Carlos, dos cervezas, por favor!"
Wiping his mouth with the back of his hand, he sat across from me, cocked his head to one side and belched.
"United States Border Patrol putting the panic in Hispanic since 1924.
Chapter 2.
Took my clothes off. There's hardly anything that'll put pause in a lawman quicker than some naked guy waving his taquito in their face.
He shrugged.
33 years on the job, I've had enough of him waved at me.
I watched as Buck drifted through a turn in the road, billowing dry red dirt like an angry cloud behind us as we headed southeast.
I thought you and Dillinger were more burrito size.
Well, we are, but I can't let those federal boys get too good of a look at it, 'cause they might want to haul it back to D.C. and try and fold it in two and put it in a quart-sized pickle jar at the Smithsonian or something.
Guzman sipped one of the beers from the Yeti cooler that sat on the floorboards of the sparklingly new GMC 3/4 ton.
You sure you don't want a beer? You gotta keep hydrated down here.
Glancing to the right, I kept looking for some landmark that might show me where my country ended and another began.
No, thanks. Dry territory where you're headed. So hot and dry there, a grass widow wouldn't take root.
He took another swallow. Told those federal boys I was borrowing your shower, but that I hadn't seen you, even though your damn truck was parked right outside.
They're not going to let me go back over.
Oh, hell, getting into Mexico is no problem. It's trying to get out that's a little tough.
He gestured with his beer.
Have one.
No, thanks.
He eyed me.
You're kind of a serious fella, aren't you?
Lately.
Rigoda says they took your daughter?
I watched the sun dropping to the west and was stunned by the colors that were so different from my part of the high plains, the purples and yellows fading to ochre like an old bruise.
Yep.
There was a long pause before he spoke again.
Somebody's got to say it.
Don't.
He nodded and drove on in silence for a while before turning to the right and slowing the big truck.
What? Running lights where there really shouldn't be any.
He kept slowing down and edged to the side of the road as one of the trucks, pointed in the other direction, pulled up beside us.
Put your hat over your face like you're taking a nap.
I did as he instructed and waited as he killed his engine and the whir of his window became the only sound.
What the hell are you silly bastards out here doing?
A younger voice answered as another man laughed.
Snipe hunting. How about you, Captain? Oh, having a beer and enjoying the cool of the evening.
Looks like your buddy might have had one too many.
Yeah, he's a lightweight from over in San Angelo. Hey, no shit, you guys out here whistling around with just your running lights on, and you're going to have a head on with some drunk.
Like you?
There was a pause.
They've got all of us out here hunting for some sheriff from Wyoming. I don't know what it is he's supposed to have done, but they brought in two extra shifts to look for him. Sounds like one bad hombre.
Oh, I don't know.
Sometimes those federales can't see the monkeys with the palm trees.
Guzman hit the ignition on his truck and left them with a final warning, in a different tone of voice. "Turn your headlights on before you run over some poor unfortunate." There was a chorus.
"Yes, sir."
His final words squeezed out as the window came up. "Nobody wants that paperwork." They laughed and pulled out as I raised my hat a bit. "Safe to come out?" He threw the lever in gear and roared away.
"Boy, they want you bad.
McGroder's going to know I'm with you after the scene at the Gardener."
"So?
Don't you think those guys will report you being out here?"
"Those men work for me, and if they don't want to be checking peckers at the lowest bordello in southern Juarez, they better not be telling anybody where I am anytime soon. Especially the FBI.
I glanced at the clock on his dash. "Am I going to make it?"
"Oh, yeah. My man will get you to Mass on time."
He grunted. "He's pretty serious about his religion, to the point of carving crosses in his cartridges." Guzman took an old dirt road, swerved right, and we pulled to a stop. Shutting down the motor and opening his door, he climbed out and dragged a vintage Dallas Cowboys gym bag from behind the seat. I pulled out my duffel, and we walked through a few scrub oaks and bushes scattered with trash to the end of a tall fence as the last rays of the sun disappeared below the desert floor.
"Where are we?"
"You see that swell into the creek down there?"
"Yep."
"That's Mexico. And as you might have noticed, the fence ends 20 feet that way." He turned to look at me and pointed. "And it doesn't pick up again for another quarter of a mile that way."
"So it's not contiguous?"
He laughed, bumping the gym bag against his leg.
"Hardly. Some places it's I-beams 20 feet tall, some places a single strand of barbed wire, and in others it's like this, nothing."
I stared out into the darkness, looking at the faint greenish glow to our right that looked like some special effect from a bad 50s science fiction movie.
"Juarez. The streetlights look green because of a lower voltage."
I nodded. He shook his head. "Stupidest idea I've heard in my life."
"What's that?"
"A wall. Hell, almost 50% of the illegals in this country arrive by plane. They get a work visa or a tourist one, and then they just stay." He walked to the edge of the small bluff. "They've been shooting the drugs over the wall with T-shirt cannons, using remote-control planes, digging tunnels." He took a few more steps, still looking at the lights. "The cartels and assassins I'd just as soon shoot on sight, but I can understand the immigrants. Most of these poor people are just looking for a little hope, a chance at a better life picking lettuce 12 hours a day at less than minimum wage. Now how can you hold that against him?"
I said nothing.
"Found a 9-year-old girl about 3/4 of a mile from here." He gestured behind us. "Legs swole up like a salt-cured ham where she'd got bit by a big diamondback, and then, to add insult to injury, the damn thing curled up next to her to stay warm and sleep through the night."
"She live?"
He huffed a laugh.
"No, and neither did the buzzworm once I got done with him."
He glanced toward the green lights on the horizon. "Hell, my family came from Mexico."
"When?"
"February 3, 1848, when we brought Texas with us. 5 generations in this country and Spain before that." He laughed. "Now don't be too put off by my men."
I glanced around. "He's here?"
"Oh yeah, watching us right now, I can guarantee it." He turned toward me and dropped his voice. "He's part Apache and part Tarahumara, a tribe known to be some of the best long-distance runners in the world, at least when they're not obliterated on corn beer."
"I'm not going to have to run, am I?"
"I wouldn't rule it out, but I'm betting if there's a fast way to get from A to Z anywhere in Mexico, he knows it."
Buck took a few steps forward and peered into the semi-darkness.
"Besides, he's got other talents."
"Like what?"
"Let's hope you don't have to find out."
He pointed into old Mexico.
"He's there."
It was as if he simply appeared. I'd been looking across the creek only seconds before, and he hadn't been there. But an instant later he was, standing quietly amid the rushes and a few cattails, a thin young man stood with a vintage rifle cupped in both hands, a weapon almost as long as he was, with a braided piece of rope as a sling. His hair was very thick and long, pretty much covering his face. He was dressed simply, huaraches, canvas pants, and an orange T-shirt with a cotton poncho to guard against the thin chill in the air.
"Come on, I'll walk you over."
He started off, and I followed.
"Are you sure there's nobody else around?"
"Nope, but he is."
We walked across the slope and then picked a few flat rocks to ford the 3-inch-deep creek, and in a few minutes we were standing in front of the skinny young man.
Walt, meet Isidro.
Does he have a last name?
Not that I know of.
I extended a hand to the wiry young man. Walt Longmire. His strong hands stayed wrapped around the M1C Garand that looked like it had seen lots of better days. Etched in the wood of the stock with what had probably been a horseshoe nail was a single word, Epitaphio.
He doesn't talk much, but he can do bird calls like you never heard.
Buck glanced back at me.
What's the state bird of Wyoming?
What?
The state bird of Wyoming, what is it?
I took a moment to readjust my head.
Western Meadowlark.
With Guzman holding a hand out in presentation, the young man raised his head, and in one of the most exact replications of a Western Meadowlark call, he trilled the end and looked at me.
Well, I'll be damned.
Maybe. Buck smiled and then stepped to the side and spoke in hushed tones to the kid, finally pointing toward me. As far as I could tell, the Indian nodded his head once. Guzman slid the gym bag into the crook of Isidro's elbow, reached over and squeezed my shoulder.
I wish I felt better about where you're headed and who you're going up against, but at least you've got a good team to die with.
Thanks.
He stiffened. I'm not kidding. They're going to kill you, and the guy that does it will probably still have the smile on his face from saying, Buenas noches.
His eyes searched for mine.
I know you said not to mention this, but then don't.
He shook his head and stripped the bag from his arm.
It's a suicide mission. That's what you're on.
I nodded and tried to smile.
Wish me luck. I'll do better than that.
He held out the bag with the Dallas Cowboys football helmet printed on the side.
Trade me.
Curious, I handed him my duffel and took the bag and unzipped it. And it was filled with handguns in differing states of condition.
What the hell is this?
Collateral. The seer said the two of you are going to use the old gun trader ruse, and in that case you're going to need guns to trade. He slipped the strap of my duffel up onto his shoulder, but in an act of kindness drew out the Bierce biography and handed it to me. You're not going to need a change of underwear or a toothbrush where you're going, but a book is always handy.
I took it, and then tilted the vinyl bag and started counting.
There must be 10 guns in here. A singular haul for a weekday in El Paso. But don't get caught with them in Juarez, or it's 10 years in a Mexican prison. He reached over and tapped a bulging, zippered compartment at the end. There's a little ammo for some of them, along with something else in there in case things get really hairy. I began reaching for the zippered tab, but he brushed my hand away.
Later, if you need them.
He looked around and palmed me a tarnished but hefty set of brass knuckles.
You've got to be kidding.
Just in case somebody takes all those guns away from you. Or you need a little stealth. I figure you're big enough that if you hit somebody with those, it'll kill him.
I'm not looking to kill anybody.
Whoa! Hold up there, Hoss. He dipped his head, looking under the brim of my hat.
You better be ready to kill anybody that comes at you. There ain't no court of law over there where you're going, not even the bullshit law they got in Mexico City. It's the real deal Wild West where you're heading, and the only law they've got is survival of the meanest son of a bitch standing. You got me?
I nodded. That Las Bandejas country is the home of some of the worst drug cartels in Mexico. And that fella Bidarte waltzed in there a little over a year ago and carved himself a piece of the kingdom. He's badder than they are, and I didn't even know there was such a thing.
He smoothed his mustache with a wide hand.
I can't think of anything worse than having somebody I care about in the hands of a creature like that. I'm going to give you a piece of advice to go along with those guns and knucks. Don't trust anybody. Not the police, not the military, nobody. They are rabid animals, and you've got to be ready to put them down in an instant if you're going to get back what's yours.
I slid the strap onto my shoulder and thrust my hand out to him this time.
I don't know how to thank you.
Come back in one piece, then you can buy the beer.
I'll come up with something better than that. When I turned, the wiry kid had already started off at a brisk walk along a path heading to Juarez.
Hurrying to catch up, I glanced back and could see Guzman waving to me like a ship you would never see again.
Isidro was walking, but it was the fastest walking I'd ever attempted. and after a while I was lightly jogging just to keep him in sight. There were thorn bushes on all sides of the path, a little higher than my head, but after a while the bushes left off, and we were on a dirt road that I could see led into the sprawling outskirts of Juarez. I was glad the sun had gone down, but I was willing to bet that it was still a good 80 degrees. I was starting to get winded when I saw Isidro wrapping his rifle in the woven cotton poncho he'd been wearing. He was standing on the broken curb of the first sidewalk we'd seen, his expression impossible to read. "How much further is it?" He remained silent and looked up the street to where a spectacularly painted bus sat idling with about 30 advertisements for dentists plastered on the sides. He gestured toward it. The door was closed, but when he knocked on it, it opened, and we were treated to the driver, who looked like he must have been sleeping, extending his hand for the fares. Not sure how much we needed, I gave him 2 pesos, which seemed to satisfy him, and Isidro and I took a seat about halfway back. Every couple of blocks, the ancient diesel would grind to a stop. People got off and people got on. 2 women sat in the front. The older one, who was on the left, turned and looked at me, so I tipped my hat. She immediately turned back and never looked at me again. A few more passengers got on, the women got off, and before long we were in the more populated areas near the center of the city. After a few more stops, Isidro got up and we moved to the side entrance. As we stood there, I became aware of a charm hanging from his neck, a kind of devil with horns and a pointed beard, but handsome and, if possible, kindly-looking. I reached across and pointed toward the charm, using one of my 3 words of Spanish. "Diablo?" He studied me and then shook his head and covered the charm with his hand. Speaking in a mutilated voice I could barely understand, he said, "Diablo." He offered nothing more, and I followed him out onto the sidewalk into an alley in front of us. He didn't hesitate and started off into the darkness. I had little choice but to follow. From the way Isidro traveled the alleyways and avoided the lit main streets, I had the feeling he wasn't unfamiliar with the back doors of Juarez. There were a couple of times he pasted himself against the wall, and I followed suit, figuring there must have been someone whom we weren't supposed to meet. On one occasion, a couple of Policia Federales in their open half-tons with heavy guns mounted in the beds slowed and glanced up the alley we had occupied, but they either didn't see us or, if they did, didn't care and continued their slow roll through town, looking for all the world like an occupation force. Under the shadow of the spires, we crossed the plaza and got to a gate underneath a tree alongside a hand-laid brick wall where Isidro punched a code into a modern-looking keypad. We heard a faint click, stepped into a garden full of flowers, and began moving quickly across another open area where a number of decorative archways looped underneath the cathedral and the Misión de Nuestra Señora de Guadalupe. A man in a light-colored shirt with a collection of pens in his front pocket seemed to be waiting for us. As we got closer, I could see that he was actually dressed in vestments and that the man was a priest. He held the door open for us, and we hurried inside and down some steps into an area with books lining the walls and heavy tables arranged in an impressive symmetry. The priest spoke in quiet tones with Isidro, and then turned to me and spoke in English. "We are so pleased to be able to assist you." "Thank you. I am Father Rubio. Any friend of Señor Guzmán is a friend of ours." He gestured toward one of the tables, indicating that I should sit. "Please, Isidro will communicate with your friends, and then you will join them." I sat at the nearest table, careful to place the NFL bag on the floor, out of sight. "Again, thank you. Would you like a glass of water or something? I'd love anything to drink." He disappeared for a moment and then came back, placing a doily and a glass in front of me. I took a sip as he sat in the chair on the other side and whispered, "I've noticed that Isidro doesn't talk much at all, and when he does, he seems impaired." He leaned forward, his soft dark eyes studying me. "They cut out his tongue. The drug dealers, they cut the tongues of the children years ago at the place where he is from, the place where you are going, Estante del Diablo. Isidro survived." "Estante? Shelf. Shelf of the devil. It is a small mountain village near an area called Las Bandejas, south of here, near the Médanos de Samarayuca Nature Preserve." "Sounds beautiful." "It was, kind of like Eden before sin arrived." He glanced behind him. "The Tarahumara Some of them relocated from the west to escape the cartels. But the evil followed them. The farmers in the area were forced to give up their legitimate crops and began growing drugs. Isidro's father refused, and they killed him and his wife. She was an amazing woman. Her mother was involved in the Spanish Civil War, a Republican loyalist fighting against Franco and the fascists. You have seen the rifle Isidro carries? Epitafio? It was his grandmother's. He sighed and studied me some more. Do you know how he and Guzman first met? No. The Policía Federal were first making up their tactical squads, you know, SWAT, Terrorist Response and others, and Guzman was down here at a firing range to teach with a number of other specialists from different countries when this young man comes riding over the dunes on a mule, a battered Garand rifle hanging from the saddle horn by a piece of rope. He stood and walked to the kitchen behind him to refill my empty glass and placed it on the doily again. The men, they began laughing, but Guzman took the boy aside and set him up on a platform and told him to shoot the 30-yard target, which Isidro does. 3 bullets. Guzman looks through the binoculars he has and shakes his head, telling the boy that he only hit it once. Isidro disagrees, so Guzman has him shoot the 50-yard target, same 3 times, same result. Only one hole? Only one hole. So the